Welcome to Radical Love, a foster parenting podcast. I'm Corey Hazabeard, and by my side is the amazing and talented and always making me laugh, Megan Hazabeard. How are you doing?
I'm excellent. Thank you.
We have been away for several months.
A long time. A year? Two?
I think it's been 3 to 4 months since our last podcast.
Feels like longer than that.
So we have been extremely busy, and we'll get into kind of how we've been busy, but between the two of us, we have all done, you did a 2 hour long radio interview. How was that experience for you?
Interesting and nerve wracking. And that's it. That's all I got.
And then
so long ago, I don't remember.
I also was interviewed by the same woman a month or two later.
Yeah. I talked you up so big on it and I got you your own gig.
I know. I was really impressed how talented you are talking me up,
but they had to book you with others. I was a solo act. And they wouldn't let you
go on. Yeah, it was a dangerous moment, giving me 2 hours on the radio. We've also done, what else? We've done TV interviews, which was kind of crazy. We did a TV interview for
a local. You did that. I think I was out of town that day.
You were out of town. It was a local newscast. We've both written articles and different things for different websites and magazines and newspapers in publications on what it's like to be foster parents. And I mean, we have done a whole...
It's the first time people are asking us for stuff instead of us just giving unsolicited advice.
Yeah, it's the first time in our lives people are ever like, we want your opinion. Oh, okay. Well, we gladly will give it to you. So it's been fun, but that has pulled us in a bunch of different directions, and we've been extremely busy. So we are recording in a new style. We are recording in our home this time instead of my work office, which has been our normal recording studio, and now we're just doing it in our living room.
I mean, that was part of it. You had people living at your office all summer, so that made it difficult.
I did. The place that I work at had 4 college students living literally in my office. It was, and the AC went out in the summer, so right now it's still a hot box.
Now I remember why we didn't ever set foot in there again.
Yeah, it's disgustingly hot, and it's like 80 degrees outside, and I think it's 90 was what I saw in my office earlier today. So it is a bit warm. So we're recording in our home now. We're recording just in our living room on a couch.
Super comfortable.
Staring deeply into
very
each other's eyes.
Ladies man style.
Oh, yeah.
The bottle of...
Courvoisier.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course I would know that one.
We'll take callers later.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's nice. Wow. I haven't heard a ladies man or done a ladies man impression probably in 15,
since
16 years.
Since you were a ladies man.
I was never a ladies man, and you can attest to that. So we've also been extremely busy with kid stuff. Summer happened the entire time we were away.
So then we became responsible for children 24/7 instead of that nice chunk of time when someone else is responsible for them.
Yeah, pouring ever so lovingly into their lives 8 hours a day at school was then bestowed upon us. And we forget this, but taking your kids to camps and being actually good, active, and engaged parents is difficult at times and time-consuming. So we did not have time to do a podcast, and we apologize for that. And due to our new...
To be fair, we also didn't have time to shower, so we were lacking on a lot of things.
And we were very crabby the entire time.
That's not true.
We lost a lot of sleep. No, you disagree?
I disagree.
I lost sleep. I don't know about you.
I had a great summer.
I did too.
The story changes.
Lack of sleep and busyness does not mean
is going on record.
A bad summer make. Like, a lack of sleep and being busy is an example of what living a life is. You know, never a dull moment in our house. We even, for the first time since our honeymoon, we went on a vacation where we did not stay at a family member's house. We went to Florida.
True. We stayed at a friend's house.
Yeah, we stayed at a friend's house. We went to Florida with a great family that we're friends with. They invited us to Florida to stay in their house, and it was one of the best weeks of my life. It was just fun.
Oh, yeah.
Beach going.
Beach vibes, yeah.
We got to read books.
Actual books.
Actual paper books. I got to listen to probably 20 hours worth of podcast. No. 30 hours worth of podcasts while driving, which I love podcasts and kind of zoning out and driving and doing that. That's a lot of fun.
Not this one, though. Don't listen to this one.
Yeah, I don't listen to this podcast at all.
We're not promoting this.
I don't know why anybody would listen to this. So this summer has been pretty wild, other than our weird wild stuff.
Is yeah. Children gone wild.
Oh, jeez. Might have to edit that one out.
Whatever.
Yeah, so this summer, we in our house, we do not hide any controversial topics or what's going on in the news from our kids. We are kind of, we just want to be very blatantly honest with our kids. Now, granted, we're not going to tell them the gory details of everything that goes on in the news, but we also want to engage them where they are and what they understand at an age-appropriate level. We have a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old, and so with those two, we can get in pretty much everything that's in the news for the most part. And so we don't hide any of that kind of stuff. We go into pretty deep dialogues with them and in the controversies or whatever that is going on in the news in the time. Both Megan and myself, we both spend a lot of time. Almost all of our news now comes from Black voices and voices of color. So we want to be as informed as possible to the topics and things going on in the culture of our children's lives. And so that comes from a place of seeking out voices that are different than our own. We regularly admit that we are two white people that do not know what it means to be Black in America or pretend to know. And so we try to seek out as many voices as possible. So we, when raising our children, that we can help them, guide them, and raise them and be proud of their culture. And Megan, you spent a lot of time doing this as well. How do you feel you've spent a lot of your time researching these voices, and anything come to light or anything that was kind of shocking to you since you've been? Because I'll admit, I was not entrenched in these things before I went to seminary. Seminary was the time when my life kind of opened up to people of color, in hearing their voices and seeking them out specifically, which was about 6-7 years ago now. I grew up in a community in the suburbs, essentially of St. Louis and Fort Worth, Texas, that were predominantly white, and so my background was immune to the problems and plights of people of color in America. And so we're just trying to...
I would go even further and say that it's the case that, like, for me particularly as a white heterosexual female, like, the problems that I had most attuned to in my 20s was, you know, feminism and equal white rights for women, because it's easier to see a problem that affects you. But, and really, and not, you know, as we can look back and see, there's always been racist and, you know, homophobic issues that have been there, you know, in our recent past and our far past. And it's really the case that, like, it never affected me personally before. So I never really, I mean, I was always read about it and was interested in, you know, but didn't ever took the step of doing anything about it. And that's now that it directly impacts me and my life and my family, it's so crazy to me that all this can go on and then people can just go about their day and have dinner with their family like normal and, you know, not really focus on it. But and all that to say, that's, I was there not too many years ago, you know, not involved or invested in it. Now I feel so much more invested in it and feel so passionate about it. And not only that, for the cause of how, you know, Black people are treated in this country, by authorities and by other figures, but also, sorry, I just, my brain,
You're coming from a long day,
yeah,
of work.
I
was in my office
door
working on stuff. So literally she walked in the door, picked up a microphone, and we were jumping into this and trying to get it done before our son gets dropped off from a bus. So if we're a little slow, we're trying
so
to fit
slow
these in.
Yeah, I don't even.
But
who are you? Sorry.
Yeah.
What? Where am I?
You just woke up next to me this morning. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
But what we're trying to say is that if you had not always thought of these things and it hadn't always been in the front of your brain, we understand. We are right there with you. But we also don't want to mansplain, whitesplain, any of these things. We are new to this experience and new to the all of this. And so we're trying as little as possible to, as little background as we have, trying to, as white people, now seeing the problem that we see in the world, but also how it affects our family and how we dialogue that as a white parents to our children of color, and how we go through. I mean, this summer we had the shooting at Orlando at the Pulse nightclub where over 50 people were killed and another 50 plus were injured. We had Philando Castile and Alton Brown who were killed this year. And then we had the five police officers that were shot and killed in Dallas, not Fort Worth, I apologize, and the passing of Muhammad Ali. These are all huge cultural things that happen that have really, really impacted our kids' lives, and it seems to be topped off now with Colin Kaepernick, of all people. I did not see that coming. If you would have told me a year ago that the quarterback for the backup quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers would be causing a stir amongst our nation and causing a stir in our family about racial injustices in the world and in this country and questioning what it means to be an American, what it means to show pride in our country. It's been an interesting ride. We've recently had deep conversations with our sons about Colin Kaepernick, and we are both very leery of our kids believing things that we believe.
We really have a lot of conversations about forming your own opinion and what that looks like. My parents were more than happy to have me vote the way they voted. It was a bonus for them with all their kids. But for me, it's really important that they kind of research and vote and make decisions based on what they feel is right or important, not because anyone says it. It's what they truly believe and feel.
And I think the interesting thing about Colin Kaepernick, it reminded me of a quote from Malcolm X, and I'll just read it here real quick. It says, "We need more light about each other. Light creates understanding, creates love. Love creates patience, and patience creates unity." And what I really deeply feel is that Colin Kaepernick is shedding light on an issue and a topic that people can't hide from now. I think because of Colin Kaepernick choosing to sit and kneel for the national anthem, it is causing more and more white people to have to pay attention to the plight and injustices in this country. Colin Kaepernick is shedding a light on these things. Too many times that the Black Lives Matter movement can just be written off as crazy people by whites. It's too easy for white people to get upset about the phrase Black Lives Matter and want to change it to All Lives Matter when it's clear that all lives do not matter. They're not all equal. And we live in a country that was founded on slaves not being human, let alone equal. And so we are in the wake of all of this, and Colin Kaepernick is broadcasting to this country in what we care about most, Sunday football, and making us think deeply about race and injustice in our country. And this week, talking to our kids, one of them, our younger one, came to us and said, "You know, I've thought about what Colin Kaepernick is doing." And I said, "Oh, yeah." He's like, "Would you be mad if I chose to do the same thing?" And we had a 2 to 3 hour long conversation about this. We also listened to interviews with several people about views on Colin Kaepernick and why he's choosing to kneel and how it changed from sitting to kneeling. We talked about and listened to articles about the national anthem and Francis Scott Key. And now our youngest son is choosing wholly on his own, choosing to sit and pray for the Pledge of Allegiance and pray during the national anthem. And we have not told him how we feel about this at all. We did not push him in any way towards this, but we want to support him in what he's choosing to do. And I am personally extremely proud of him for choosing to make this decision. And he can articulate very, very well, especially for a 10-year-old, why he is choosing to do this and what it means. What kind of feelings do you have about this? What are the conversation we had with our youngest son and his decision to do this protest alongside Colin Kaepernick?
Yeah, no, it was really interesting, especially coming from a 10-year-old, his insights on it and what it actually means to him. It means for his like culture and his background, and then how, you know, he has a lot going on in his life as a 10-year-old anyway. And for him to speak up and say what he wants about this, I thought was I was really proud of him. He went to some protests with us this summer. So it's not that we don't ever talk about it. He also lives in a home where he's open to talk about it and discuss, you know, his feelings and opinions.
When we say we went to protests, we went to a couple Black Lives Matter vigils and protests for the shootings of Philando and Alton.
Yeah, and I think that was important for him to go to at that age and just see, you know, what that meant to be out there, and, you know, how it was in downtown Nashville, and it was very peaceful and a really moving, endearing night that I think impacted our whole family.
Yeah, our whole family. And I do want to apologize. I'm just now realizing in my head that I said Alton Brown instead of Alton Sterling. And I just want to make sure that that is said. We watch a lot of cooking shows in our house.
You watch a lot of cooking shows.
Yeah, that's true. But I apologize because it is that important to us that I want that name to be appropriately said and appropriately represented, that Alton Sterling was also killed. This summer has just been just amazing for especially our youngest. His political, his just awakening to being proud to be Black. And it's just so amazing to see all of this. And
oh yeah, last night he sat on the floor in the living room and was cutting out the Pan-African flag in the colors, and he was doing different crafts associated with that. So
yeah, it was really adorable while we were watching football and the Dallas Cowboys rooting them along to a loss.
It's more American than that.
Yeah. What's more American?
Eating fried food.
That's true. We have a first day football celebration of eating fried food. We don't do much of that, but we want to go back. Some of the racist things that and racial issues that we've encountered since being foster parents is kind of overwhelming. First, before we even became foster parents, we've probably said this earlier on the podcast, but in one of our first classes, we were told that people who are foster parents do not want children of color, especially older children of color and older male children of color. So which changed our complete trajectory of who we wanted and how we opened our home to different kids in different cultures. So that was very important to us as very early on, that we wanted older siblings of color. And then I went on a field trip with our youngest son, and no one knew who I was. I was new to the school, and I was just a chaperone, and a teacher was yelling at all the Black students. All the kids were doing the exact same behavior, every single one of them. White kids, kids of color were all doing the same things. But this teacher specifically sought out each Black kid and sat them down and made an example of sitting them down in front of the white kids, and that those kids of color were in timeout and were in trouble. And I stepped in and said, I don't understand why these kids are being punished. These white kids are doing the exact same thing. And I was asked to leave the field trip.
As it turns out, no one likes being called a racist.
No, even when you say it as politely as you can possibly muster.
Yeah.
And just be like, hey, can you help me understand why? And I literally said, can you help me understand why the black kids are in trouble and the white kids aren't? And that did not go well.
It was also known as, why are you being racist?
Yeah, but I tried to not just go, you're a racist.
Well, in the defense stance she took and the anger she had, I feel like was clear where she stands with that. And yeah, you did get asked to leave the field trip.
And which is crazy because I'm known as like one of the most mild tempered persons. And then, I mean, both of us, I was in a grocery store and ran into one of our other kids' teachers, and a teacher came up to me and said, oh, your kid, I thought he was a thug.
Well, I don't know what's more offensive, that whole thing or that she thought it was like a funny story of telling, because she told you and me separately the same story of first seeing our kid, assessing him as, I believe her words were, straight from juvie,
mm-hmm.
And a real troublemaker. And then she ended with, oh, haha, it turns out he's super sweet, you know?
Well, in the telling to me, she called him a thug and it looked like he'd just come out of prison, is what she said to me. And that was not a...
On so many levels, that was offensive that she thought, like, that was a funny story and, like, okay to say to our faces and just... I mean, and coming from an educator, and, like, she's not a new educator. She's been in, you know, her position for a while. So it was just really disturbing and upsetting that she somehow managed to tell you that and also tell me that.
Yeah. Our kids have been accused of stealing things when they were in our house literally all day, you know, or in our sight the entire time. They were accused of stealing stuff. We've had neighbors tell us that neighbors have called them and say, warning them that there was a black kid walking in front of their house. And it ended up, it's because that's where our son gets dropped off for his bus stop. And it's just, there's one thing after another. Our kids have also described how people look at us when we're in grocery stores and in, you know, stores and things like that, and how uncomfortable people look at us, like they're angry or upset with us or weirded out that we're a transracial family. And we've also been there when people of color question the ethnicity of our kids, that they're not black anymore as well. And it's really, really hard for our kids to hear things like that, because they love us and we love them, and we do everything we can to not isolate them in a white bubble. We do not want to raise white kids, you know, or that look black, you know. That's not what we are. That's not who we are. That's not what we seek to do. And that in particular really has been one of the harder things for them to overcome, as people of color questioning their blackness still. Is there anything else that I'm missing out of that?
Oh, there are.
There are several.
Again, I just straight from work can't think of anything off the top of my head beyond that list.
So, I mean, that's been a year and a half to 2 years of our life is living that out that I just listed off. How do you feel hearing all that? And what would you have told yourself when we were going through PATH or the training to be foster parents, what you know now?
Oh, I mean, again, I don't know. I grew up in St. Louis, and my only interaction with people that were negative toward people of color were, like, you know, the older generation, grandparents' age. So that was, and so in my head, you know, in my head, it just always seemed like, well, if all the races are like older and they're set in their way, and like eventually once all those people die off, then there won't be any more racism. I believed that like clearly from the age of 10 till way, mm-hmm. way later in my 20s, and partially moving down south and moving to the southern states and being around people. It was the first time I encountered open racists that were like in their 20s. And I just remember being like dumbfounded at that, like, oh, wait. Like, I mean, it's kind of like the way that, you know, now we know more about smoking. And so people don't smoke when they're younger. Not that nobody does. But it's just like, oh, you think like, oh, nobody who knows what we know about smoking now will like pick up a cigarette and start smoking. So that kind of problem will go away. But that's not true either. But so to encounter younger, you know, people who are in their 20s and 30s and even 40s and 50s that like just, and it's not, I don't know. Like to me, the open racists are less scary. The Confederate flag toting, I got two guns on me at all time and three you can't see, are somehow less terrifying than like
the subtle,
the subtle races who I would assume be the ones that are, make it to positions of power in all different areas and aspects of the community. And that's what I find so terrifying and so affecting, and what like goes through my head about, you know, raising children in this sort of environment.
I mean, I remember growing up as a kid when Rodney King was beaten, and it was on video, and it was all over the news, and the riots happened after they were found, the police officers were found innocent. I just remember being told, you know, distinctly that, you know, most of the time people of color make up abuses and things like that from police officers, and that Rodney King was just a one-time thing. I just remember distinctly hearing that over and over and over again. And every time that somebody of color tells you that they were hurt by somebody in authority, to not believe it and to question it, and to call it, you know, just absolutely false, because my experience is the opposite of that. And so, you know, we cannot hide from what has been broadcast anymore, on our nightly news constantly. And so we also can't hide from the things that we see almost on a daily basis. And this is by no means an extensive list of the things, or an exhaustive list of the things that we've gone through as foster parents and that we've seen throughout the last 2 years of going through foster parenting. But it's overwhelming and unbelievable that these things still go on, and that I commend Colin Kaepernick and all the people in Black Lives Matter for allowing me and all other white people that have been so ignorant and stupid and didn't believe you, didn't trust you, didn't care. And I look back at any tacit racism in my own life, or hate or disparaging things that I've ever said, or just because I blame the victim, and I was taught to blame the victim through being a white person growing up in a middle class, you know, part of Texas and in St. Louis.
A white male, you mean?
Yeah.
Victim, I mean, blaming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Because I find myself just so broken about all the stuff that we've seen over the last 2 years, and then also knowing that I haven't cared as much as I should have for my entire life.
Well, I mean, I think caring and like actually doing something are the difference. And putting yourself in a position where you can do something, I think, is important.
Yeah. I am so excited that our kids, they both have said things that they want to do things that help kids or help people. One of our kids wants to be an activist and figure out a way to end racism and bring equality in the world. One of them's talking about becoming a lawyer to protect people of color and protect people from injustices and around the world. It's fascinating. And I am so honored to be part of their life. And
yeah, and it's exciting knowing, you know, the age they are, they've grown up with a black president and what that means, mm-hmm. and how truly life-changing. I mean, I was super excited to get a black president, but didn't even realize like how life-changing it is for children who now it's not even a like, oh, what if that could happen? It's a, this has happened and now Now what else?
I mean, over the summer, our youngest wrote a letter to Barack Obama, and when he got the return letter in the mail from Barack Obama, he was ecstatic. Like, could not stop jumping up and down.
President Barack Obama. It's an important title.
Yeah, sorry. And he was just...
Well, he got all kinds of swag.
Yeah.
I mean, children should always write the president. I'm a firm believer in that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's super exciting when you think the children who get like little to no mail anyway. I think it's super exciting. I told my son, I said that I had written Bill Clinton when I was in elementary school because he was the president. And I most certainly outlined my plan for an appropriate recycling program and what that would look like. And I did get a response back, although as far as I know, none of my ideas for recycling were implemented, which is disappointing because I feel like we could have changed where we were at on recycling.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you'll send it to the other Clinton?
I mean, I'll send Hillary the same letter if I need to and see where we're at on that. And get a response, but I did get a response letter, and you know, for the longest time was so excited that the president wrote me back, which was very cool. But like, our son, he got a letter, he got 8x10 glossy photos of President Barack Obama, and then 8x10s of the first family and photos of the dogs, and great. I had to go buy a whole new set of picture frames and things.
Yeah, I mean, currently in our living room is the first family photo next to our family photos,
along with like the nice letter and the seal. I don't know. It was just so cool, and his excitement about it. You know, that'll stick with him, I think, his whole life.
Yeah, it's so beautiful to be part of their lives in this, and I really want to reach out if there is anybody who wants to be a foster parent and doesn't know if they can do this, or
I thought you were going to offer to ghostwrite letters
for kids
to the president. Your kid needs a ghostwriter. Got you.
Yeah, I'll help you out. You can just send me an email at radicallovepod@gmail.com. I'll gladly
outline a couple topics you'd like to mention.
Yeah, but no, really, there. I think race. I think one of the biggest reasons why people don't want to foster kids outside of their traditional race is because they're just afraid, not because they're racist, but because they're afraid or uncomfortable with what that may mean, or how they can overcome the differences, or how they can bridge those gaps. And believe me, you can do it. You can definitely do it. If you love and care the kids, you will do it. You will definitely do it. And so we by no means are an authority on this. We relent and constantly
seek out. I'd like to make
a
disclaimer that I have no idea what I'm doing as a parent or a human being.
And we're just
it's
slowly
amazing I survive every day.
And we're just slowly falling in a towards success is what I think is happening. But really, if you don't think you can do it, I promise you can do it. If you have questions and you want our input or thoughts, please do. If you are a person of color and you want to tell us how you feel about raising kids and the struggles that you go through, please let us know. We want to hear it. It's radicallovepod@gmail.com. And I'm sorry, radicallovepodcast@gmail.com. So please reach out to us like that. We apologize. We've been gone for so long. It's good to be back. So Megan, to end it off, what is making you a better foster parent?
Ooh, okay. Yep. I'm going to throw it to we left off. I was in my Hamilton groove.
Uh-huh.
And now it's morphed to, I went back in the Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Discography?
Yes. To his first hit, In the Heights. So I've been listening and watching clips of that any chance I get.
Awesome. And I get to hear it a lot too. I'm just glad that there's just a little bit different than Hamilton now.
Corey, since we're sitting here,
and I'm just staring
and I was
at you.
Really concerned, what are you, what's making you a better foster parent?
I would definitely say this whole podcast has been about it, but Colin Kaepernick is making me a better foster parent.
I didn't know you could pick a person.
Oh, well, I mean, that and maybe, and if I had to pick something else, maybe politically reactive.
Jesus is making me a better foster parent.
You had to bring in JC into the conversation.
That's right.
What's going to make more people mad? Talking about JC or race? Who knows? we're not afraid. No, but politically reactive. There's a podcast that is just on fire. It's just funny, poignant, and they have just great political conversations. And it comes from two people of color. One is W. Kamau Bell, the comedian, who is just, he's one of my favorite comedians. And then you're going to have to help me with the other
Hari
guy.
Hari Kondabola.
And I can never say it. But yes, politically reactive, the podcast. But if we had to be not talking about a podcast, I would say Colin Kaepernick is making me a better foster parent. And the kids choosing to do these things, like these radical acts of protesting. And I mean, even our son yesterday while watching football, he said, what if a black person said that they were going to sing the national anthem and they instead sang the third verse of the national anthem
Yeah, he poses a lot of what if questions, but that might have been our favorite.
Yeah, and he was just like, what if they protested by singing the third verse that we don't sing that talks about killing slaves and being afraid of the flag? So I was blown away by his thoughtfulness and his ability to articulate his feelings and why he does it and just have a deep pride in his blackness. And it's just, I'm so proud to be part of that.
We're all for protesting until he figures out to protest like laundry. It's a very fine line.
Yeah, it's a very fine line. Well, this has been Radical Love, a foster parenting podcast. Thank you for...
Yes, thank you for joining us.
And sticking with us. And thanks for
letting us... This afternoon on our couch.
Yeah. We're just staring at each other's eyes awkwardly right now. Sorry for the silence.
Now I remembered all the laundry we have to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remembered all the food I have to cook. Uh-oh. All right. This is a Radical Love podcast where we say radical love demands radical action.
Togetherness. I'm just going to throw out a word see if you could.
We're going to mutual high five over the podcast.
Nothing you say will ever be wrong. 'Cause it just feels good being in your arms.